This sermon was recorded at Christ Church Overland Park, a congregation that exists to be a people fully alive in God's kingdom.
Thank you, Beth. Today, we're going to continue in our series, Foreigners in the Land. We're in 1 Peter, and the idea that Christians are foreigners or exiles, aliens, it's a theme that runs throughout this letter. The very first sentence, Peter says, "Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to God's elect, exiles scattered throughout the provinces." They were foreigners because as Christians, their primary citizenship was not in an earthly kingdom, but rather in the kingdom of God. Now, the passage that immediately precedes the passage that Beth just read, Peter reinforces this alien theme by declaring that they are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation. In other words, a people called out and set apart as God's special possession. And then he continues in this theme, picking up with our passage for today. "Dear friends, I urge you as foreigners and exiles." And what he's about to teach them is really remarkable. It must have confounded many of them, just as it does us. So in light of this status as aliens and foreigners, what are they to do? Well, Peter calls them to what I would describe as the freedom of submission. The freedom of submission. That's what we're going to talk about today. This whole idea of freedom that we have as Christians. Verse 16, live as free people. Christian freedom is a theme that runs throughout the New Testament. Live as free people, Peter says, while he simultaneously says, in the same verse, live as God's slaves. Now, we need to just say up front, this word slave, it is offensive to us for obvious reasons. You know, the worst stain in the history of our nation. And so we are repulsed by this word and this idea, but we've got to be able to get over that to hear this message that Peter has for us, because this is a word that's in the Bible. The Greek word is doulos, and sometimes it's translated slave or bond servant or just servant. But it's a word that's used over and over and over again in the New Testament. In fact, Jesus is described as a doulos. So we need to be able to hear this and have it get through our filters. Live as free people, live as God's slaves. This is what Paul says about his own life, 1 Corinthians 9. Though I am free and belong to no one, I have made myself a slave to everyone. Notice, he made himself a slave. No one made him the slave. He did it. He made himself a slave to everyone. There's the paradox. Christians are free, but we're free through submission. We're free through service. We're free through obedience. And this understanding of freedom is completely at odds with our culture. It is indeed alien. And you're talking about something that makes you an alien in our culture. It's this. And since we live in our culture, my assumption is most of us, this idea of freedom through submission, it sounds odd to us. It's like, wait a minute, that doesn't sound like freedom. So let's talk about this. What is true Christian freedom? That's the first part. And then once we think we've kind of defined this and got our heads around it, then how does it get lived out? What is it? How do we live it out? So what is it? The way the word freedom is used here and throughout the Bible is so different from our modern understanding. Live as free people, live as God's slaves. And Peter clearly thinks these things are one and the same. In fact, what he means is that we can live as free people because we are God's slaves. Because we're slaves to God, we're free. We're free so we can serve and submit to others. We say, what? That doesn't sound like freedom to us. And here's why. We only understand freedom in negative terms. In other words, you're free if you're free from. You're free from constraints, free from restrictions. We think freedom is mutually exclusive from commitments or promises or obedience. To the degree I'm serving someone or I am submitted to someone, then I'm not free. Why? Because it limits my options. Freedom from. Like we talk about, like, what is getting married in our minds? You're losing your freedom, right? Why? Well, because you're making promises, you're making commitments, and so you're losing your freedom. Now, this is just an aside. This is what we believe in our modern culture, and you see it played out in so many ways. So many ways, and I don't have time to go into all the ways that this is illustrated in our culture. But let me just say, this is a fact. No people in the history of the world until our modern age have ever thought of freedom in this way. No one. This is not just, you know, so what we're talking about in the Bible today is not just simply an idea limited to the Bible. The people in the biblical times would have thought we were crazy the way we think of freedom. It's this idea of freedom where we're just free to do whatever we want, basically, that's kind of the idea in our culture. You're just free, just do what you want. That has never been tried before in human history. And we'll see how it goes. We will. Hey, no restrictions. That's what the sexual revolution's all about. It's all about freedom. We don't want to live with any kind of restrictions on who we have sex with and all of that. Well, now we're not even restricted by our biology or genetics. I can just be whoever I want. Be free. That's what freedom is. I'm free to just decide. And we'll see how it goes. Obviously, I don't think it's going to go great. I don't think it is. Freedom from restrictions. The more options I have, the freer I am. That's the way we think. But here we're told that we're only free if we're slaves to God. That's where freedom comes from. Now, how can that be? Well, it makes no sense to us unless we understand two assumptions that undergird this idea in Scripture. First, the Bible assumes there's no such thing as negative freedom. There's no such thing as freedom from all restrictions or freedom from constraints. The Bible assumes that we are all slaves to something. We're all slaves to something. Romans chapter 6, Paul says we're either slaves to sin or slaves to God. And there's no third alternative. You're one or the other. Exodus chapter 20, the Ten Commandments. You shall have no other gods before me. The assumption is you will either worship God or you will worship something else. You will make an idol and you will worship it. We're worshiping beings. There's no third alternative. And this idea isn't just in the Bible. Euripides, a Greek author, 500 years before the New Testament was written, he said, no man is wholly free. He is a slave to wealth or to fortune or the laws or the people restrained him from acting according to his will alone. Is that an overstatement? I don't think so. He's essentially saying, look, we're all slaves. We all have to live for something. Something has to animate us, right? Something has to give us meaning and purpose in life. And whatever it is that would completely devastate you if it were taken away, that thing is your master. These things are our controlling spiritual authorities in our lives. And they enslave us. Just one example. Many of us have a slave-master relationship with our careers, with professional success. I've got to have it. And so I'll do anything, or I'll put up with anything. And we do. We let our careers beat us up because we want success. Everybody is living for something. Everyone has something that is driving them. Everyone is a slave to something. That's the first biblical assumption that undergirds what Peter is saying. The second assumption is related. If we're all slaves to something, then we're all living with various kinds of restrictions and constraints, because commitment brings restrictions. If you're committed to your career, if you want to be successful in your career, then you're living with all kinds of self-imposed restrictions, right? I love to fish. It's an obsession. It's a passion. I love to go to Canada and do that. But I only go 1 week of the year, not for 6 months. Why? Because I love my job. This is more than a job for me. This is a passion too. It's a calling. And so I live with that restriction until I'm retired, and then I'm going to fish more. I'm not free to just go to Canada for the whole summer. Everyone is committed to something that brings us meaning in life. And therefore, everyone is living with restrictions. That's true of every person. There's no such thing as complete freedom, freedom from all restrictions. So then what is freedom? In biblical terms, what is freedom? And this is the key. If you don't hear anything else today, hear this. Freedom, in biblical idea, is finding and living in the liberating restrictions. Finding and living in the liberating restrictions. For example, you go to the doctor, October 16th for me, and the doctor says, you need to go on a diet and lose weight. Stop eating whatever you want. And if you don't, you will soon find yourself living with some restrictions, the restrictions of the hospital, and perhaps even the ultimate restriction of being dead. Or you have another option. You can live within the restrictions of what you eat now. Eat healthy and live a longer, more healthy life. Which set of restrictions, in this case, which set of restrictions are the liberating restrictions? You see what I mean? The liberating restrictions fit your design. The doctor, in essence, is telling you, look, your body is not made to eat the way you're eating. And so you're ruining it. You need to bring your eating in line with your nature. You buy a car. It only takes premium fuel. You don't like that restriction because it's 40 cents more a gallon. So you put in regular gas. If you do that, the engine sputters, it clanks, it doesn't run right. But if you put in premium fuel, because it's built for premium fuel, it runs well, it takes you where you want to go. Premium fuel only is a restriction that fits the design of the car. It's a liberating restriction. It allows the car to function at its best. If the Bible is right, then we are not just some cosmic accident We are created by God, and not only created by God, but we are created for God. And therefore, we are only free and functioning at our best as human beings when we are living within His liberating restrictions. Does that make sense? Living within His liberating restrictions set us free to experience life as He intended. And so, what are those liberating restrictions? How does this idea get lived out in practical terms? And Peter describes three liberating restrictions that help us live in the freedom of God. Verse 17, love the family of believers, fear God, honor the emperor. These liberating restrictions are freedom through submission to God, in the church, and to the world. And so let's look first at freedom through submission to God. Fear God, Peter says, and perhaps before we go further, we should think about this word submission, since we're talking about freedom through submission. Well, what is submission? It's a Greek military term, hupotasso, which means to arrange troop divisions in a military fashion under the leadership of a commander. Now, in a non-military use, it was primarily used in military terms in ancient Greece. But in non-military use, it was used in this sense, a voluntary attitude of cooperation, assuming responsibility, and carrying a burden. So I would describe it this way. To submit is to voluntarily cooperate and assume responsibility under leadership so we can be on the same page and accomplish our task. And so the freedom of God's servants in this world is the freedom of aliens and strangers. Like Abraham, Peter envisions these early Christians as strangers in the land. And so Peter asks his friends to submit to God by abstaining from sinful desires that characterized the culture that they were living in. And he describes these sinful desires in chapter 4, wild living, drunkenness, sexual immorality, and the sin of all sins, detestable idolatry, Peter says. So to abstain, he says, and it really fits the calling of strangers because this word means to distance ourselves. You know, a temporary resident in a foreign land doesn't adopt all the customs of that land. Why? Because they're not staying. It's not your true home. And so as they submit to God and abstain from these sinful desires, they experience freedom. What kind of freedom? Well, Peter says that these desires wage war against our souls. Why? Well, because we're not made to live in these desires. They lead us down a path of destruction. They bring us to ruin. We're not made to live in these over-desires. Epithumia is the Greek word, and it means an over-desire. So like a desire for sex is good, but when it becomes an over-desire, an obsessive desire, it becomes destructive. And so submission to God sets us free from the war that these desires wage upon our souls. And it sets us free to be a good witness to our neighbors. Live such good lives among the pagans. The word pagan means without God. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day He visits us. Next, freedom in submission in the church. Love the family of believers. In chapter 5, Peter says that the elders of the church, so the elders of the church, and in our context, who would the elders of the church be? Well, it would be the clergy, the staff, the parish council. They're the lay, elected lay leaders, elders of the church. Peter says the elders of the church should be submitted to the chief shepherd. In other words, Jesus. They should be submitted to Jesus. They should be eager to serve and to set a good example. And then he says that the church should submit to the elders. So the elders have to be submitted to Christ, and the people in the church have to be submitted to the elders. And then he says something crucial. He says, all of us, elders, everyone should be clothed with humility toward one another. Now, we have to acknowledge that this idea of submission, because I know you're thinking, well, Patrick, you just told me I'm supposed to submit to your leadership. Well, actually, Peter said it, but yeah, I get it. If I was sitting where you're sitting, I'd be thinking, I'll take that under advisement. We just have to acknowledge this is not a favorable idea in our culture. It doesn't come naturally to us or easy for us. We're conditioned to only hear it in negative terms. But when we live in the church, when we live in these liberating restrictions, God sets us free to experience his favor and grace. Listen to what he says in chapter 5. Submit yourselves to your elders, all of you. So submit yourself to your elders, period. All of you, so that means elders, everyone alike, all of you clothe yourselves with humility toward one another, because God opposes the proud. So if we're proud, if we're arrogant, if I think I'm really something because I'm a leader, then God is opposed to me. He has set himself in opposition to me, if that's the way I think. God is opposed to the proud, but shows favor to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up, that he may show you his favor and grace in due time. So when we submit to one another and clothe ourselves in humility, it sets us free to experience, sets us free to love each other and to experience the grace of God. And then finally, freedom in submission to the world. Honor the emperor. Verse 13 and 14, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human authority, whether to the emperor as the supreme authority or to governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. So Peter is challenging them to submit to the governing authorities for the Lord's sake, not just because they have the force to govern. And Peter, just like Paul, he assumes that these governing powers are ordained by God and are part of the order that is God's will for us. And of course, this is not just some sort of blanket statement that we as Christians are just required to do whatever the government may tell us. Peter assumes government is there to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. And when government gets those things backwards, and there are lots of examples, of course, the easiest is Nazi Germany. When those things get turned around, then we have to say no. We will no longer cooperate. But in the main, we submit. It frees us to live as good citizens. And that's important because Paul tells us in Romans 12, he says, look, as much as it depends on you, be at peace with everyone. Not just in the church, but everyone. Be at peace. Why is that good? Well, that's good for the church, right? Is it good for the church if the church is at war with the government? No. There were Jewish people called zealots, and they were determined to not be at peace with their governing authorities in Rome. And Jesus warned them what was going to happen if they kept that mentality. And they kept fighting, and they kept fighting, and they kept fighting. And guess what happened? In 70 AD, the Romans sent in the troops, and they destroyed Jerusalem. They literally destroyed it. They destroyed the temple. They killed thousands of people. It didn't serve them well. So Peter says, look, be at peace. When you are good citizens, it sets you free to live in peace and to be good witnesses. He says, for it is God's will that by doing good, you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish people. You know, the early church, there had never been Christians before. It's hard to imagine, but there had never been Christians. They were weird people. Outsiders were very skeptical and suspicious of Christians. They even accused them of being cannibals because they heard about this ritual where they ate a body and drank blood. And so there were just all these kind of rumors going around about them. And Peter says, look, by submitting to the governing authorities and just living peaceful, quiet, decent lives, you will silence your critics. Because we are God's people, we are servants. And the example of Jesus is right in front of us. Knowing who he was and what he was coming to do, Jesus was able to subject himself to people. He came not to be served, but to serve, to be a doulos, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Christians, we are free. However, we are only free to the extent that we are in bondage to God. We know what it means to be fearfully in awe of God's presence. And so we are free to love our brothers and sisters. The war against sinful desires has been won, and so we are set free to live good and decent lives. We are free to love one another, and we are also free to honor unbelievers and to respect the role of authority given to each one.